You look at the game last night and you think to yourself, this Manchester City team are going to be the first Premier League team to score 10 goals in a match. It is going to happen. We are going to reach that high water mark.
Subscribe now to the OTB Football Podcast stream, wherever you get your podcasts,
and download the OTB Sports app.
Yeah, you're welcome back to Off the Ball. And Nathan Murphy will be joined by Brian Kerr for the Spurs v Liverpool game around about 4:30. I'll be talking to Brian before that. We're going to go over to Leicester now to talk to Gavin Duffy, who watched the game. 29-23 for Leicester Tigers in the end against Connacht in a really, really interesting European Champions Cup game. Connacht went in at half time, the back of two tries, and were in great place at half time, but ultimately sin binning in the second half cost them. But right at the end, then Carty with getting the drop goal for what could be a crucial enough bonus point. Just, I suppose, to start, Gavin, that you've got to be thankful for small mercies at the moment that you're even watching these games.
Yeah, I was really privileged to watch the game live today. You know, with so much going on, so many cancellations right across the competition, that to see the best team in England, obviously, in at home in Leicester against Connacht, we really put it up to them, it has to be said. But I think we'll be, you know, I think in time they'll probably recognise that, look, a losing bonus point isn't the worst result. But at the same time, I think they'll be a little bit sore, a little bit hurting, and hugely frustrated that they didn't get more out of this game.
Yeah, was it like a kind of a performance, maybe a result of a team that is on a road here and is going very much the right way, but just ultimately a lot of kind of sloppy turnovers really in the second half? Obviously the sin binning as well, just a few things maybe going against them on this road that they're on.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, I mentioned it during the commentary that Andy Friend is kind of living by a mantra of fast, relentless and adaptable, and they've shown that at different stages throughout the season. And today, that, you know, they never really got the pace of the game up. It wasn't really played at a very intense speed, albeit the hits, though, from Leicester in particular, were getting off the line in D. And it was those exchanges, really, that I think that took out of Connacht. They never got across the kind of the gain line as effectively or as efficiently as they had been doing in the URSD or even at the back end of last week's victory over Stade Francais. So they did have to adapt, which is one of the key corners of Andy Friend's mantra, is adaptability. So they did adapt. They kicked the ball a lot more and kind of mirrored Leicester's style in that regard. Leicester, as we mentioned during commentary again, like, they kicked the ball more than anybody else in the competition last week. And sooner today, I'd love to see the stats in terms of who kicked the ball more, but kind of stuck in that kicking game. And when they did, and when it did it effectively in terms of catching the ball, kicking it long, they kept Leicester at bay. But, you know, on the couple of occasions where a 50-50 ball was won by Leicester, or a tackle came in from Leicester and the second man came in and got on the turnover, that's what really hurt Connacht. You know, when they couldn't quite win that physical battle or the kicking game, that's when Leicester got their foothold in the game, got territory, and then kicked to the corners. And then once they were in the 22, they were really proficient. Like, they did a huge strike rate there. I think they got 4 tries in total, and every single one of them probably came from that initial set piece inside Connacht's 22.
You mentioned kicking there. Like, I'm going to admit, I'm not somebody that watches rugby every week, but that was something that was really striking in the game. Leicester just very early on kicking. What's the background to that? Is it to do with the fact that they're playing Connacht to try to disrupt their game, or is it just as you mentioned, is it a regular thing with them?
It's a very regular thing. It's look, they have George Ford, who's their regular 10, who's one of the best kickers of the ball. I've seen him play over the last couple of weeks. He's played in a dinner jacket, as I mentioned during commentary. Yeah. As well. The Leicester pack, so they've kind of gone back to the old Leicester values of old. Steve Borthwick, since he's gone in there, like, he's blooded 39 new players, I think, over the course of the last 18 months. But he's instilled this kind of old value Leinster rugby. I was going to say Munster because it's almost similar to Munster values of really strong, dominant pack, really good set piece, really good maul, really good kicking game. But on the back of that kicking game, the hugely vital component to that is a really strong line chase. So that when you make your tackle, that you have a second guy or third guy in there really putting pressure on the opposition team, that you can eke out the odd penalty here and there. And when you do that, you've got your penalty around the halfway line or inside the opposition 22. They're quite happy to go to the corner then because they're back in their maul and they're back in their big forwards to rumble over from close distance. So that they're very patient in terms of waiting for that opportunity to get into the opposition half. And their main way, the main avenue to do that is through their kicking game. And as I mentioned, George Ford is one of the best out halves in England. His kicking is outstanding. So when you have someone like him dictating that, it's going to become a huge part of your game and your weaponry. So Freddie Burns wasn't quite as efficient as George Ford was today, but still did enough. And they still had one or two occasions where Connacht didn't quite deal with the high ball or didn't kick well enough that gave Leicester the opportunity to get that penalty that they're looking for and to kick into the corner again. So is very much part of Borthwick's game plan. It's very much part of the Leicester identity now in terms of how they're playing, and they're doing it really, really well. I watched them against Quinns a couple of weeks ago, and you know, Quinns, similar to Connacht, they want to play a fast, high tempo, swashbuckling game, play from anywhere, play with your head up. But when you're being suffocated in your own half and a huge rush defence coming at you, it's very, very hard to get that game up and running. So they're 13 from 30 now, so it's a ploy and a tactic that's proven very, very valuable for them.
Yeah, and I think in the second half they played like a team that basically was confident, like that it was kind of going to turn the screw and win the game. But if you cast your mind back to half time, it was 17-12. Connacht got a couple of quick tries. Like, it looked like the game was kind of slipping a bit away from them, and they must have been delighted going in at half time. And I guess that would be part of the regret coming after the game tonight when they go home to Galway and reflect on it.
Yeah, I think at half time, I think they would have been in the dressing room saying, lads, we're 5 points up and we haven't even gotten into a groove yet. You know, the game was very fragmented in that first half, which I think suits someone like Leicester. You know, when you have a big pack, you want it to be kind of a slower game, fragmented, set piece orientated. So I think Connacht would have got in at half time and said, lads, we're 5 points up here. We haven't got into a flow yet. Keep hold of the ball. And to do that, they gotta get to the breakdown quicker, because Leicester were really physical in that area. They put two guys into every tackle, and then a third guy at times, someone like Raphael in the back row, he was getting in at the breakdown then. So Connacht, I say, would have said, right, be patient. Mirror Leicester and almost in terms of the game plan, kick it into Leicester's half. But when you get to their half, you know, up the pace, up the tempo, look after the ball. They got to the edges a couple of times, but Tanner Halloran, the pass to Alex Whitten on a couple of occasions, one was behind them, one was knocked in a tackle. So they were getting those little glimpses that these opportunities are there for them to go after, and they weren't quite executing. So I think at halftime, they would probably say, look, that's 5 points up. We haven't really fired too many shots, and it's there for us in the second half. But I think the turning point then, Johnny, was second half. Leicester, I think it was 4 or 5 minutes into the second half. Sorry, 10 minutes into the second half. Connacht already got a penalty at this stage.
Mm.
But they brought on Dan Cole. They brought on the Argentinian international, Julian Montoya. They changed the front row. And, you know, there's only one outcome from that scrum, really, when they had it. You know, the lads were obviously pumped up to the side and told, we thought we'd do a job on Connacht scrum. You guys have been brought on. You better do a job on Connacht scrum. And I think, you know, they set out their platform then for the rest of the second half. They won their penalty. They kicked to the corner. In fairness to the Connacht ball defence, they held firm. But ultimately, Leicester got a penalty underneath the sticks. And then from there, they just said, right, let's scrummage this. And then they did. 3 or 4 times, they got a penalty. Finlay Beelan went into the bin. Strangely enough, Connacht managed to defend it really well at Bundy on the blind side. But once the ball kind of squirted out, Leicester found a way because of numerical advantage.
Man over, yeah. But,
you know, that was the turning of the game, really. I think they got 5 penalties in total through the scrum. And another aspect of the game was 11 handling errors from Connacht as well. So certainly in that second half, when they needed to get back into the game, they just couldn't get back into it due to handling errors. So, you know, they'll be hugely frustrated, Johnny, I think, in the way they played. But you've got to tip your hat to Leicester and say, you know, the pressure they bring, the physicality they bring, the very simple, clear game plan they're bringing, you know, they're 13 from 13, and it's clearly working, clearly effective.
Yeah, you mentioned the handling errors. That so many of them seem pretty much unforced as well, and that'll be something they'll be very regretful of, because they got into so many, even including the first half, they got into so many good offensive positions where they looked like they might do something, and just sometimes it was just a turnover where they held on or whatever, but handling errors as well.
Yeah, and I think the first half, some of the handling errors was due to playing right on the game line. Mm. Jack Carter was getting it almost standing still, and he's trying to find the second or third guy away from him with a pass, but Leicester were coming flying up off the line. If you remember the first strike Connacht got, Ben Youngs flew off the line, Jack Carty's pass, he almost intercepted it, it ricocheted into Bundyaki's hands, and he quick offloaded to John Porch, and he's away under the post. But that could easily have been a reversal for Leicester being under Connacht's post. And then in the second half, though, they did get a little bit more depth, but then they were losing the ball in contact, they were carrying the ball into contact, and they were spilling it on the ground, or they were trying to maneuver away from the defence. And I think they'll be hugely frustrated, Johnny. I think they will feel that was one that got away from them. But again, you have to go back to go, right, well, Leicester are top of the Premiership for a reason. You know, they're on a roll. Was that pressure just something that, you know, Connacht couldn't handle more so than, you know, being sloppy in their own handling? Was it that it's just the sheer pressure that came on them? I'm not too sure. I think, you know, when you play teams like Leinster a couple of weeks ago and the show how good they were in the first 40 minutes, I think it was more down a case of Connacht's handling ability rather than the sheer pressure from Leicester.
Where are they in terms of their development? Like, because, you know, I suppose for Connacht to be able to go to Leicester, I think the bookies met at a 7-point game before the game, so they were fairly nailed on. Connacht have come a long, long way.
Really have, Johnny. I think, you know, when you look at the team sheet initially, I think the first indication to come a long way is that they could make 6 changes from a team that bet Stade Francais by 20, 30 points last week. 6 changes, all of them internationals to come into the team. You know, we would have thought that Connacht could have left off 6 internationals and win a Champions Cup game. And yet they could make those changes coming into this game. So on the back of a win. So that's the first instance where you're kind of going, wow, there's really strength and depth now being developed within this kind of squad when you can bring back in 6 guys having won a Champions Cup game. So there's that element of it. I think Andy Friend has done a tremendous job in terms of, you know, rotating players where needs be, introducing guys when they get an opportunity and building that strength and depth. So I think that's improved a hell of a lot. When they have that strength and depth, that means they can be more competitive week in, week out. And I think they've proven that. I think the only blemish, I think, in terms of a performance was Dragons. And that's one I think that will continue to fuel their energy and fuel a bit of their chip in the shoulder, a bit of their anger maybe, that they can't drop to that level again. And I think since then, you know, Munster away, unlucky not to win that one, put Ulster to the sword in the Aviva. Leinster, they went toe-to-toe for 40 minutes. Again, were mistakes and a discipline cost them at the first 10 minutes of the second half. But look, I think Leinster, I don't think anybody would have lived with Leinster the way they played that night. And then they come back out, they beat Ospreys and they beat Stade Francais. So they're certainly moving in the right direction. It's been built off more strength and depth, and it's been built off a game plan that suits them in terms of the personality that they have. They haven't got the biggest pack. You know, they're giving up size nearly in every game they play, but they're moving the ball quickly. They're being intelligent in terms of how they're trying to attack. You know, Jack Harris will kick when needs be as well, but they're trying to attack space. They're trying to utilize, you know, like someone like Matt Kenson, who I thought was missed today because of his interjection in games when he's a little bit off the cuff and he pops up anywhere. But they're beginning to find a rhythm in terms of how they play. And I think, importantly, they have shown that ability to be adaptable as well, like they were today. But just that handling error count will hurt them.
You mentioned the out half as well, who just seems to be absolutely loving the style of rugby at the moment. And just Rory O'Connor, the Irish Independent, is a regular on the show here. His tweet after the game: losing bonus, good result for Connacht. Jack Carty playing his way into Ireland Six Nations 23 was pretty much an outstanding performance. He had that one kick which was at the end, which was a few inches from being perfect, just ended up going over the game line, but he had a great game.
He really had, and I think those are the moments that I think will catapult Jack back into being second behind Johnny Sexton. You'd argue at this stage Johnny looks like he's with the man against the Six Nations. Unfortunately, Joey Carberry, as we all seen, you know, went off injured last week, so there is an opportunity there for somebody to stake a claim. I think those big moments that, you know, that bounce of a ball, I think it was Connacht were behind by 6 at the time. He saw the opportunity to go for the 50-20 and it just bounced the wrong side of the corner flag. That goes into touch there. Connacht get a line out. You're still only 6 points behind. But that it is a mistake, though. You have to put it down to a mistake. You should be kicking the ball dead. And that scrum ended up in a scrum penalty to Leicester. And they kicked it. And that ultimately put the game out beyond Connacht's reach. But he has enough good moments, I think, for him to be forgiven one or two blemishes, because nobody goes through a game without the odd mistake. And I think Jack has proven over the last couple of weeks, he brings enough good moments, solid moments and spectacular moments to a team that can unlock defences, that he certainly warrants another look, I think, by Andy Farrell over the next couple of weeks.
What role would you envisage him having in the Six Nations then?
I think if Ireland want to continue on the way they played against New Zealand, Japan, Argentina, Jack Carty slots in. It's exactly how Connacht are trying to play. Really fast, high tempo, a decision maker on the ball, and a decision maker in terms of when he gets the ball, he'll have 2 or 3 runners off him on a flat line, and he'll have an option behind those 2 or 3 runners to pull it out the back and attack a little bit wider out. And you need someone who looks like he has time in the ball, but also can make those good decisions. Is he giving a 2-yard pass, a 5-yard pass, or a pass back behind those lads to get the ball wider, as I said? So Jack has all that in his armory. He's proven that, I think, now over the last couple of seasons, and particularly again this year, I think he's up another level. So he can play that passing running game that Ireland looked like they want to continue to develop over the next couple of weeks and months, like they did from the New Zealand, Japan and Argentina series. So he has that in his armory. I think the biggest question mark still over Jack is probably his kicking game. As good and all as it is, you know, there is still a few flaws in it. So it's just to marry that up. And as I said, I would look for the positives in out halves rather than what they can't do, because I think everyone's going to have flaws. I think they're all being judged off Johnny Sexton's standard, and that's fair enough. But
you know, he's a different player, though, as well. If you wanted to bring him in, we'll say with 20 minutes left or whatever.
Sorry, Johnny?
He's a different player. Like, so if you want to bring in 20 minutes left, and I suppose the other point is he's coming into an Ireland squad that's so full of confidence that he'll just buy into that himself anyway.
He is, and that's the thing. I think he suits Ireland's game plan to a T. I think he was slotted in there effortlessly. And I think that's the thing. Like, when you're playing that high-tempo game, when you're playing it right in the game line, there will be one or two mistakes. But I think you've got to live with that and say, right, there will be one or two mistakes, but we're going to create a whole heap of opportunities by the way we're playing. You know, we're going to give those 53 passes. We're going to put a pass through a needle, missing two guys and hitting the third guy in a different channel. And Jack Carty has proven he can do that. So, you know, I'd be sticking his name in. Certainly, he's got to be in the squad. He has to be in the squad, I would think. And then from there, whether the two Burns and Leinster or himself get on the bench remains to be seen.
Yeah, obviously, Joey Carberry's injury problems continue, but like massive options for Ireland at out half. What do you make of Bundiaki today?
I thought Bundy had perhaps one of his quieter games. He was effective when he was on the ball, but I think Leicester knew all of Bundy's threats. You know, I think that they didn't let him get into any kind of rampaging ball carry at any stage, and you know, he didn't have that energetic moment that he normally has where he gets a turnover, he gets a big carry, and you can see the team really rallying behind that. But I thought he was quietly effective, but not necessarily, you know, producing one or two big moments in terms of a turnover or a ball carry that we've kind of grown accustomed to Bundy giving for Connacht. So, but nonetheless, he had a solid game. I think Sammy Arnold was solid enough outside him as well. But I think it was more of a game for the tight five and the eight. I think they dictated who won and lost this game, and the back three as well. There's a lot of kicking. So the guys in the middle, the 12s, 13s, just did a lot of chasing up and down the field without really having an impact on the game.
Just finally then on Connacht, obviously getting that bonus point, how will they assess things after the two matches?
I think based on the uncertainty around COVID and the implications that will have in the competition, as we've seen, games have been awarded to teams correctly or unfairly. Mm. Perhaps in Leinster's case, you know, that they're going to appeal that, especially when you see games being postponed for the same reason. I think having 6 points on the board after two games, they'll be relatively comfortable with that. Because who knows where this competition will end up. You know, they go into January time, they might change the format, and whoever's ranked 1 to 16 at that particular moment in time might get into the knockout stages, and Connacht with 6 points on the board will be happy with that. But I will feel that they're probably sitting in the dressing rooms now, or they're even probably getting on the bus at this stage. They'll be hugely disappointed that they will feel they didn't give a true account of themselves. They didn't get up to the level that they've shown over the last couple of weeks and months, and they'll feel that they've left Leicester off the hook. And that's, again, a sign of how far they've come, that they'll be disappointed to come away from Leicester, who are 13 out of 13, top of the Premiership, best team in England, and you'll feel disappointed you didn't win the game.
Yeah, absolutely. They've come a long way. Riyad Mahrez just had a goal disallowed for offside, and the beautiful VAR looked at it and realised he actually was onside. A really, really beautiful goal. It's grim for Newcastle United. 3-0 down now at home to Man City. Leinster are appealing that Montpellier cancellation. What's your take on that? I mean, it's a very complex situation for all sports, but rugby as well. What do you make of this?
I think on the back of the other games then being cancelled, I think, you know, when you talk about sport and it should be fair and a level playing field, I would have thought that any games that were affected for COVID, if you're going to postpone games between the French sides and the English sides, or French sides and Irish sides, then all games should be postponed and dealt with the same way. You can't have Leinster being punished for not being able to supposedly field a team that's going to be safe to travel and safe for the opposition to play against. So I think there'll be a bit more of a twist in that story yet over the next couple of days in particular, and how they deal with those games postponed going into January time. They'll have to have a clearer picture. There has to be a clearer regulations or a clearer process in terms of how games are being managed, and the process of, you know, a time, whether it's 48 hours before a game, you have to declare, you know, your team are fully COVID free or whatever the process might be. It has to be a lot clearer than it was over the last 4 or 5 days. So you just hope that they continue to play games, that the games can go ahead, that this competition can be played and it's full, but it's going to be very, very hard for them to sandwich in games now that were postponed from last weekend. So it'll be disappointing if they can't proceed in a way that's deemed fair for all, because I'm not too sure over the last 48 hours that Leinster have been treated in the same way that the other French clubs have.
You know, what are the potential outcomes of this? Because you're going to see a lot of cases just across the population in Britain. Obviously, Ireland, the cases are going to rise as well. And, you know, we've seen in the Premier League, the fixtures decimated. So if in the worst case scenario, in terms of the first world problem of sport, in the worst case scenario of lots of games being called off in the near future, like, how worried should you be in terms of, you know, as you say, just completing this and getting through it and playing games? Are we just going to have a raft of postponements and 28 nils or whatever it is?
Yeah, I think, thankfully, in a way, you know, the next couple of weeks, particularly in Ireland, teams go back in now and we play a couple of rounds of individual matches. Mm. And in fairness to all four provinces, not once has, and I stand corrected, but I believe not once has a game been postponed due to an Irish team falling foul of COVID outbreak or COVID regulations. You know, we've seen the other teams on occasions where they've had a 4 or 5 COVID cases and they've had 25, 30 guys as close contacts. That hasn't been the case across the four provinces. I think the operation teams, and there are a few who've implemented the policy procedures being very strict and tight as they were at the time, do deserve a lot of credit for that. I think there is some safety, I suppose, or comfort in knowing that they'll go back into the provincial sides or provincial, I suppose, round of games over the next 2 weeks, that those games, I can't see falling foul to it. I said they will be played. I think the squads are big enough. I think they know how to manage it within their squads, that if there is one or two cases, which undoubtedly there will be one or two cases, I think they've managed it and they've proven that they can manage it, that it's not a wide case then of close contacts, that they train in different pods. They break up their team meetings. They do it virtually. They don't meet in small rooms, and that they manage it that way. They continue to get testing every day or every second day to get PCR testing. So the next couple of weeks, you know, the big provincial derbies, I can see them going ahead. But unfortunately, Johnny, it's a huge impact on every gate.
You could see that today as well.
You can. You know, I think Leicester had introduced, you know, if you didn't have your PCR pass or you didn't have your NHS pass, you had to provide a PCR test within 48 hours. Prior to going to the game. So, you know, it puts a lot of people off. If there's a bit of doubt in your mind about will I go or not go, it's going to put you off going. And unfortunately, you know, over the next couple of weeks, you have Munster, Leinster, one of the biggest games in the URC, one of the biggest fixtures in Irish sporting calendar, in Tobin Park on St. Stephen's Day, going to be close to a sellout, if not being sold out. And you're back down to 5,000 people attending that game. Similar with Connacht and Ulster, you know, that was close to being a sellout as well, up in Ravenhill. And again, the next round of fixtures then on January the 1st, where you have Munster travelling to Connacht. You know, Connacht will have to find a way of you know, cutting the attendance figure down to around 3,000 people. And again, you would have had 7,000 people attend those games naturally, or over the course of the last couple of years around Christmas time. So it's going to be a huge impact on the clubs as well, unfortunately. But I think, hopefully, fingers crossed, we can still see the games go ahead.
Yeah, it's pretty grim on that score. Just to mention, our rugby coverage and Off the Ball is thanks to Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team, Team of Us, Everyone In. We're going to finish up with a bit of Munster chat now, dominating the Sunday Independent today, Gavin. The front page, Munster's trump card, Jack O'Donoghue's try, sees off Castra, and then Brendan Fanning. Munster strapped in for another long haul in coach class. Piecing the jigsaw together is a depressingly familiar exercise for the province's chiefs, and then on the actual match itself, O'Donoghue's resolve proves pivotal in disjointed display. It was a 19-13 win over Castra that certainly didn't impress everyone, but obviously a lot of talk about Van Graan in the background.
Yeah, it's one at the same time when you look at it and go, well, how long do you expect a guy to stay in the head coach position? You know, I think if you look across at soccer, I'm not too sure, Johnny, you probably have the stats on how quickly do players or how quickly do managers go through a revolving door in the Premiership in soccer. I know
it's a shorter shelf life than ever before, you know.
It really is. And I think, you know, in rugby, you often hear coaches signing 2-3 year contracts. And then it's they might get another year or two after that and they kind of move on again. But, you know, how long were they expecting Van Graan to stay in Munster? You know, he's been there a few seasons already. You always feel, no matter who's going to be in that position now, after this, the latest coach, whoever that comes in, if it's not O'Connell or O'Gara or Mike Prendergast, you feel that person is going to be under huge pressure to hit the ground running, because straight away you know, the clock will be on, counting down until O'Connell, O'Gara and Mike Prendergast will be available. So it's going to be a tough position for someone to fill. It's a tough position to fill at the best of times, obviously, because Munster are such a brand and huge history and are really striving to close that gap to Leinster and to get a trophy for the first time in a number of years. So it is going to be interesting to see who they go for and how long that person lasts for ultimately as well. Because, you know, as I said, rugby, it's not quite like soccer, but there is that churn of coaches as well. So you'd wonder how long do people expect to be, you know, held in head coach positions. So, you know, would they have got another year out of him and then he moved? You know, would people still be happy or disappointed at that stage as well? So I think it's going to become more and more commonplace in rugby, unfortunately, that coaches will end up being kind of churned in and turned out. And whether that's their decision or decision of clubs remains to be seen. But, you know, thankfully, we're not at the stage where it's like in soccer, for example.
Yeah, Prendergast, Rowntree, Robertson, Wessels, Holland. I've heard Gerard Mullen entered into the debate as well. What's Paul O'Connell thinking on this?
What's Paul O'Connell thinking on it? Jeez, you'd have to ask Paul O'Connell. I mean, sound like a smart ass. I can't comment for Paul O'Connell what he's thinking about.
Is it a good time for him to take this job where it's available?
It's a good question. I think, you know, he's from an outsider looking in, and again, I wouldn't know what Paul O'Connell is thinking, so I don't even put words in his mouth or anything, but you'd imagine that from all the interviews that I've seen him giving about the Irish position and the impact he's making, the respect he has earned from the players, and the opportunity that he has now got also to learn at such a high level, at such a pressurised environment, that he's really cutting his teeth after, you know, a stint in Stade Francais that seemed to be really tough going for everybody that was in Stade Francais. You know, there's a club now who's churning out coaches every season. So he's cutting his cloth. He's learned his trade at a really high level, but not being in the hot seat, you know, not being the Andy Farrell, kind of the pressurized seat that he's in. So, you know, does he hang tight for another couple of years, learn more, sponge more off, you know, the coaches there? You know, I think perhaps he might opt for that option as opposed to stick himself in as a head coach at a particular moment time in his career. You know, when you look at Ron Agar, similarly, like he's, you know, what a fascinating career he's had. So far, and you know, he's given himself longevity as well, and you can see him, you know, going on to do better things with La Rochelle, and then where does he go after that, who knows? But Johnny, if you want to know what Paul O'Connell is thinking, you better go ask the man himself.
Yeah, the great man probably isn't available right now, but thankfully you are. I might not be on again with you before the Six Nations, so very briefly, where do Ireland, what are their hopes and your hopes at this stage?
Oh, I think they have to be hugely encouraged by the way they dismantled Japan and Argentina and ultimately put New Zealand to the sword as well. I think, you know, when you look back at that game, you know, you can get wrapped up in terms of, you know, Ireland beat New Zealand and it was brilliant, but New Zealand had a pass marginally forward with, what, less than 10 minutes to play that would have put them in the lead. So it's not as if we have, you know, created this huge chasm between ourselves and New Zealand all of a sudden that they have to catch us and, you know, they have to throw everything out and start again to try and catch us. So,
give me a first, second, or third then.
Pardon?
First, second, or third?
It's the hardest year for Ireland to win a Grand Slam. Going to Twickenham, going to South to France, and the way France went after New Zealand and kept their foot in the throat for nearly the full 80 minutes leads you to believe that this French team is really building something special. You know, the togetherness, the discipline that has been lacking in French teams over the last couple of years really seems to have been addressed. And, you know, whether they're too concerned about winning the Six Nations this year, hard to know. I think all their focus is on the World Cup 2023. From an Ireland's perspective, I think you've got to keep building, keep progressing. I think they've got to go and win the Six Nations.
I think that might be a second then. Thanks a million, Gavin.
All right. Thanks for taking it out of me.
We'll go to the ads.
Off the Ball on News Talk.